Hello, welcome to this podcast. This is Paul Sterrett, founder of Privacy Labs. Remember, Privacy Labs is one word. I will tell you more about what we do at the end of this podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of having Debbie Reynolds of Debbie Reynolds Consulting, often known as the Data Diva. She's one of the most prolific people that I know in this area. And I don't think there's anything that she doesn't know. And I also want to mention he's probably one of the most selfless people that I know. So I've had a great pleasure of working with her in various capacities. And Debbie, go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us about who you are and your firm and some of your accolades.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me on your show. We've known each other for a number of years, and we've always had very excellent conversations about privacy and data science. So, and you're the person that I always call up when someone asks about data science. So I'm happy to be on your show and your clients are very lucky to have you.
Thank you.
So,
you as well.
So yeah, I guess you did a pretty good introduction of me. My name is Debbie Reynolds. They call me the Data Diva. I work at the intersection of privacy, technology, and law. So I'm a technologist and I help companies navigate privacy issues as it relates to technology. Some of my, I don't know, people ask me about these accolades. It's hard for me to even think about them. So I do a lot of writing, a lot of speaking. I think I have like over, 100 plus publications, media mentions, speaking engagements for all types of companies related to privacy and technology. Two recent accolades that I received, well, three, is my podcast was voted the top five privacy podcasts in the world, and also voted top 20 by the Threat Technology Magazine for Data Privacy Right podcast. And then earlier this year, I was voted top 20 worldwide cyber risk communicator.
Oh, fantastic. And you were also featured in Fortune magazine in March of 2021.
Yes.
Yes.
I was.
So, yes. And that's kind of what I meant by accolades, because I thought that was very impressive. And yes, you are very prolific. And one of the reasons I mentioned that is on your website, people can find all kinds of dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of videos, by the way, which I see in my feed on LinkedIn regularly, which are great because they're, 5 minutes and it's video. So we get to see you there. And it's always an interesting progressive topic. So I just wanted to have our listeners know that that's what you do. And there's all kinds of other things on your website. And just so people know, it's fairly easy. It's DebbieReynoldsConsulting.com, DebbieReynolds, consulting.com. And it's just like the actress, the famous late actress, right?
Spelling. Correct. Yes. I was actually named after her.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
My brother had a crush on her at that time when I was born, and then he convinced my parents to name me after her. So yeah.
Very good. That's awesome. That's awesome. You get to carry on the name, I suppose, in some respect.
Yes.
So that's kind of why I wanted to mention that. And given that we both kind of live in the technology side of things, and we're sort of, like you said, in data science, I wanted to try and touch on some of those topics. We've had some recent podcasts on some very specific topics, but I definitely wanted to pick your brain. What do you think about synthetic data? And I know that that's fairly, it's very new. I mean, it's been used a lot, but it's fairly new. But what are you seeing there? What is the promise of it, the challenges that you're seeing from your perspective?
Yeah. I'm in favor of any and all ways that people can help protect data. So synthetic data is just one of those newer ways that we're seeing the companies are trying to protect data. So the idea behind synthetic data is that they take real data and they replace some of the attributes or some of the information with fake information, especially in areas where that individual data is not needed. So it sort of operates like real data, but But the key is when you're using synthetic data, it's made to be used for a certain purpose. So if someone were to steal or breach synthetic data, once they took it out of the environment, it would no longer work. So it would give them people false information, or it wouldn't work at all. So it's kind of a way to say, you know, as long as the data is in this environment, you can use it, right? And you can do whatever that you need to do with it. But once it leaves that environment, whether voluntarily or not, if the person doesn't have, you know, if they're not in that environment and don't have kind of the keys, quote unquote, to be able to see that data, then they can't see it.
Right. I guess you touched on something that we really haven't covered in some of our previous podcasts. A couple, and I want to get your thoughts on one other thing here in a minute, but is the data breach side of this, is that if you wanted to retain some private or sensitive information, that you wanted to, you know, generate the signal, the value of the underlying data, you could do that. And not worry about the breach, because we know how important or how ominous data breach cases can be from the standpoint of, first, you don't want to have your data breached just from a moral standpoint, but then you have the ensuing regulatory class action lawsuit and some of the other reputation damage that comes with it. So that would be a great way of looking at the value of synthetic data.
Absolutely. And that's, to me, that's one of the biggest reasons why companies are looking at implementing it. And then we're seeing a lot of businesses creating these types of technologies for that reason.
From the standpoint of moving data from one jurisdiction to another, and I know this is an area that you are very you have a lot of expertise in, as far as the data movement and the laws of the various countries and jurisdictions. One thing with the synthetic data does help with is movement across borders. So that if somebody has a machine learning effort, for example, in the EU, another one in Mexico, another one here in the States, I mentioned those because I know Mexico is very tough on data transfer, that they can do that now. Is that they can share those insights. They know they're no longer stuck with the insights they get from one data set in one country, another data set in another. Do you see that as a promising area for this, right? Because it's kind of obvious it would be, but how promising do you think you see synthetic data in data protection, data cross-border movements?
Yeah, it is significant, but I guess there are two things. So almost any privacy law that you can think of has a exception related to data that has been anonymized in some way. So for a business to be able to reach, it's kind of a low bar in my opinion, in order for a business to reach the legal standard of anonymization, is doable. Obviously, you know, there's work involved, a lot of work involved in order to get it that way. But if you can anonymize that data, you can be exempted in some ways against some of these data transfer issues that you run into. The flip side of that is that from a technological perspective, the legal standard for anonymization isn't strong enough. So I read a statistic recently that, you know, some data brokers have over 11,000 data points on individuals in the US. So just taking out, I'm just oversimplifying this, right? So just taking out maybe their people's names and certain things may not be sufficient from a technological perspective to anonymize data, but, you know, that's kind of, that's the issue that we run into now. So you can do a anonymization project using things like synthetic data for data moves, and that may satisfy kind of the legal requirement. The problem is that companies that have more insights on people can re-identify them. So we're seeing some laws or some movement in places like Europe to try to make it illegal or bar companies from re-identification efforts.
I see. It's almost like making it illegal to reverse engineer copyrighted materials.
Exactly. Like
the DMCA, or Digital Millennium Copyright Act, I think. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I guess it's about time, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So great. And you know, another aspect of synthetic data being used as a privacy preserving data generation tool or technology is this thing called the privacy budget. So they say that in the context of a machine learning, or where perhaps you may have a SQL-based system where you're querying something where machine learning isn't necessarily in the picture. But the idea is that the more you preserve the privacy, the less valuable the data becomes, the more it signals, if you will, what the insights you can gain drops. There's an inverse relationship. There is the cost to make the data private, but there's also the expectation of the jurisdiction where you are doing business or you plan to do business that has a certain strict or not level of privacy data protection rules. So let's say that they're from 1 to 10, they're a 6, let's just say it's, I don't know, France or something, where they're very, very strict on their privacy rules. So if I have a project that involves artificial intelligence or some other form of automation, that if the data has to be so constricted because of the privacy preservation that I wind up losing all value in the underlying data, then I just don't even do it at all. So you get this thing where if it was the other way around, you're in more of a lax environment, like maybe in the United States, some state that doesn't have much in the way of a law or privacy preservation or data protection law. And I have a product that I know is going to be very useful, that product then may be doable in the States, but not at another one because of the amount of protection that you have to put around the data to preserve the underlying sensitive information. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, actually. So I'll give you a real example. So mm-hmm. there was, and I can't remember what the company, I don't know if it's Sony or whoever, but anyway, there's a big tech company that has a robot dog that mm-hmm. they decided not to sell in the state of Illinois mm-hmm. because Illinois has this very strict biometric information privacy act called BIPA. Mm-hmm. So, and it has very high fines for every incident in which data is captured about an individual, like their voice or their face or, you know, fingerprints or anything like that. So that's kind of a direct example, I would say, where, you know, and I think that we've seen over the years with GDPR, some companies saying, you know, we think the cost of complying with GDPR may be too high, so let's not sell our tool or our service or something in Europe. So I think it's definitely there. I think the thing that companies get wrong about this, in my opinion, is that, and I think Apple has proved this out with their recent iOS 14.5 update, mm-hmm. is that you can preserve privacy and it can make you money. So, because you aren't, you know, customers have an appetite now for companies to help them preserve their privacy. So mm-hmm. instead of seeing it as being a loss leader, maybe it can be an advantage to help you, you know, be a differentiator in your industry where you say, hey, we respect your privacy, we'll do X, Y, and Z, and then you'll get more customers. So it's not, you know, I think companies need to think of it more long-term and in the broader mm. sense. And mm. then, you know, transparency is the new black as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, if you're not being transparent, you're not going to make money, period. So if you're stuck in these old ways or old data silo types of, you know, ways that you're dealing with data, you're not going to be successful, because the future is about transparency with the user. And then I tell companies, you know, when you're handling data that belongs to someone, it's not your data, it's their data, and you're a steward of the data. So if you switch your mindset to that, then you'll be fine in the future. But if you're otherwise, you're swimming upstream.
I see. That's a great extra sort of a facet of this whole thing, is that you can look at it from the standpoint of the privacy budget on the technical side if you're just looking down that rabbit hole. But if you pull back and say, yes, you build trust with your clientele and your businesses that you do business with when they know that you are careful with their data. So that's a positive. It is a commercially enabling kind of a thing to do. That's a great point. And I didn't really think about it that way. Okay, I think the other question I have, I guess that maybe we can, with regard to automated human decision-making, where are you seeing that going? I know that there are rules around the transparency there, so that if somebody is, and again, I'm speaking from a place of general understanding of this, and I'm sure you have a much more refined and finely grained understanding. But the idea is that automated decision-making, that if somebody wants to have an explanation because they have been impacted by a decision that's been released or been decided upon by this automated process, they have a right to have it explained. And so the machine learning, the artificial intelligence, has to be explainable and transparent, to your point. So that's kind of what's leading me to think of that, is because the transparency, going with that theme, there's another place in artificial intelligence where I think the law is. Where do you see that now? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, that's, I love your question. To me, this is one of the biggest, most important questions that is in front of us today, what you just talked about. And so the problem in my view is that we sometimes, or we're seeing technologies being implemented in ways that make people think that the computer is always right. And then the development of AI isn't transparent to the user. And then the harm to an individual can be catastrophic, but you may not see that because the harm may articulate itself in different ways. So I feel like sort of like the movies with the evil robot where, you know, I don't know. I don't know about you, but all these movies about the future, it's like the dystopian future where the robot took over and the humans are helpless. And that
Terminator.
I think that is an abdication of responsibility for humans, because we rely entirely too much on computers. So I think that computers and AI and machine learning, you know, they need a human to be able to make those judgments to say, okay, this is right or this is wrong. It'll do as much as you want it to do, but it may not apply the way that it should, you know, in a human situation. So I think having humans be able to make those final judgments is really important. One example that I give people about the harm of AI and why it's different is, let's say in a situation, let's say you go to the grocery store and buy lettuce, okay? So you bought lettuce from the grocery store and then you get a message saying, oh, well, you know, this batch of lettuce that you bought from the grocery store made, you know, 50 people sick, and then we want to recall it. Okay, so that's something people totally jump on. You're like, oh my God, like this made 50 people sick, and then we need to do something about it. The problem with AI is that if someone is harmed, they may be harmed in 50 different ways. So it's hard to even quantify what the harm is. So let's say a facial recognition camera picks up someone and thinks they look like someone who committed a crime. That person may be arrested. That may impact their life. That may impact their livelihood. You know, someone may be put on a less aggressive track in their education as a result of, you know, AI decision making gone run amok, and then you know, things in medical, you know, there's an example of facial recognition, for example, being used in skin cancer detection for people. And, you know, there was a situation where they found that this thing, this application of facial recognition was very accurate on people with lighter skin and not accurate on people with darker skin. So they would give someone a false result and they would end up in a later stage of cancer because they trusted this machine. It wasn't, you know, calibrated for someone of that skin color. So I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. I think it's, you know, we and I know you know as a data person, you know, we can't just let the machines take over. We can't abdicate our responsibility. And you know, humans have ethics. And so and machines don't, or AI doesn't. So I think that we have to be the ones to bring the ethics, bring the judgment there.
Yes, that's very well put. And I love your examples too, of the broad series of examples in ways that can impact people. And then in more than one way. So if someone is recognized as being someone who was a thief and they're arrested, sometimes you can't unring that bell. They say, yeah, you arrested. Oh, I was innocent. Oh, sure, you were innocent. Right. You know, there's, you can't unpunch that.
Right, exactly.
Unpunch someone. So that's very interesting. You know, and just while we're on that subject, one of the areas that we look closely at, in fact, we have videos, Privacy Labs has videos on this very topic, on explainability and the different types of technologies that we can use. And there's a whole series of very promising technologies that help us understand how a model's working. Because, for example, simple models are generally easy to understand, but they're not very performant. The most complex models are very performant, but are black box. So you get this kind of, again, another inverse relationship. I think from the standpoint of AI and privacy preservation and transparency, that's a pretty good coverage. Is there anything else that you see that you'd like to talk about here with regard to the technology side, that some things you're seeing that are an issue in the next year or two? Again, this is 2021. What are your thoughts there?
I think there's going to be a lot of changes related to third-party capture of data, because we're already seeing companies like Apple and Google try to shift risk of third-party data sharing. And this goes back to many privacy regulations. So almost any privacy regulation that you could think of now has a feature where it says, you know, if a customer gives you data, this is what you should do with it. And then if you have to transfer it to a third party, here's your responsibility. So it's no longer a situation where, you know, the first party company, they can do whatever they want. And then once they transfer to a third party, they can't just wash their hands and say, well, we didn't know what they did with it. So we're seeing companies limit the data that is going to third parties unless the third party can get consent from the individual. So this is gonna be really tough, right? So think of data brokers, the data broker business. They're basically changing that. So I think that will be maybe for some data brokers that can't adjust, that'll be like an extinction level event, you know? So let's say, you know, what I see is, you know, data brokers either going out of business, either getting absorbed by these big tech companies. So then they can say, this data transfer isn't a third party transfer because I'm with this other company. Or we're going to see these data brokers try to create incentives for people to give them data. Like, you know, instead of me making zero, let me give you part of what I would make. So then you can give me data or whatever. So I think it's going to be really crazy probably for the next year or 2 years to see how all this, you know, pans out, because, you know, we're seeing people get more savvy, to say, about their information. And we're seeing these regulations, you know, be pretty tough on businesses when they do these third-party transfer. So they can't really wash their hands of it unless what they're doing right now is saying, you know, I as a business have limited my third party data transfer to what's absolutely necessary. And then I didn't give them more than what they needed.
Wow. I guess I didn't really see that coming. I mean, at some level I could, but that's interesting. That is pretty ominous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
So I guess synthetic data, if we kind of roll back to the first part of the conversation, would be maybe something to pay attention to more.
Yeah, so. I think it'll be really popular. I think in order to stay in business, these companies are going to have to do some drastic different things than they were doing before. So
yes,
maybe they'll buy one private jet instead of two. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, there's big money in this stuff. Okay. Well, I think, is there anything else you want to add or leave with our audience?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I've had a great time on the show, and we've all had, you and I over the years, we've had great conversations. So I'm happy to see you're doing this work, and so thrilled to see, you know, your videos and you doing podcasts. Because I think it's just something that, you know, your voice really needs to be out there and be heard. So I'm really thrilled about that. I'm happy to support you.
Thank you. Well, you have actually, and you have inspired me. I can give you that credit right here. One of the reasons I started with the videos is because I saw you doing them and I thought, wow, that's pretty effective and a pretty good way to do it. So, and again, I do give you a shout out to being probably, I don't know, maybe one of the best resources out there for what you do. Aww. So, so anyway, I guess, well, thank you so much, Debbie. I think we'll roll it up here, but I'm positive that we'll have another opportunity for another podcast here in the next, you know, near term here. So I would look forward to that.
Yeah,
and, and just as I finish up here, Privacy Labs is a private compliance technology company. We specialize in using tools we call Unify in order to bring the entire team and the entire effort together around tools like OneTrust, Big ID, and so forth. We also specialize in automation, cybersecurity, and in audit, in particular audit, especially around AI and such. So I think we'll end it here. Thank you again so much, Debbie, and look forward to the next podcast. And please do look up Debbie if you are interested in some, you know, some top level advice, and maybe we'll wind up working on a project together from this. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Okay. Thanks, Debbie.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.